For almost 20 years now, I've had the opportunity to meet and close deals with some of the greatest agents from all over the globe. And what I've found is that most of these top agents, they really share the same qualities, the ability to let go of their own agenda and help and serve others, to having that relentless ability to keep pushing in the face of adversity through shifting markets. This podcast, World's Greatest Agent, is designed to showcase what the top agents from all over the world are doing to stay inspired, to keep pushing, to stay focused, and what ultimately drives them. I think you guys are really gonna enjoy this. Thanks for coming along the ride. This podcast here, this dude is like a brother to me. We talk 4 or 5 times a week, if not more. Our daughters are best friends. And I'm constantly pumping this dude up because of who he is just as a human being. But also, I'm just going to be totally straight up, is his game in the craft of real estate. It's crazy. He doesn't even know it. And I think that's the coolest part. I'm constantly just telling him he's a better real estate agent than me. And he dresses really well. So without further ado, bring my dude Drew D'Angelo up here. Let's go. Let's go. Welcome. Thanks for being here, man. We know you're super busy being out and about.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, thank you. Let's give yourselves a round of applause and a round of applause for the king and queen of Case, Mr. Kevin Sturdivant and Alana Sturdivant. Thank you for having us.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, man, let's start from the top, right? Like, how'd you get into real estate?
Oh, which part?
Whichever part was first for you. You know, my part started with skateboarding, yep. And I didn't know that. Yep. So you can go back as far as you'd like. Where do you think, because real estate has so many different levels, right? And you play so many different parts.
Yeah.
You're agent, right? A master agent, designer, right? Builder, investor. Mm-hmm. So it's even more important than when you got your license. Let's talk about, where did the inspiration for real estate come from?
Sure, so I was 5 years old, and my stepdad was a developer, so he used to always take me to his sites.
Okay.
So I would always be very inspired by big, like, trucks, because I was 5, I played with Tonka, I liked dirt, and I liked the smell of dirt. And I remember him coming up over a hill, and it was down in Laguna Niguel, seeing the ocean, seeing the green hills, and just being kind of enamored with that. Like, you could really do it in real life. You know, you're building it, you're playing with Legos, you're doing that stuff. But he was actually doing it. You know, He was like a grown-up kid doing what I wanted to do. And it just inspired me to be that, you know. And I didn't know it from, like, 5 to, you know, 15. I was doing my own thing. But that's really where it came from, of how can I give my children, when I have children, looking back, that experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And I get to do that today, which is awesome.
Now, I imagine that there were a few things that you did before, right? So before you got into real estate, I guess two parts of this question. Number one, what were some of those things you were doing before real estate?
Yeah.
And number two, what was that craft that you developed doing whatever else you were doing that had you think, you know what, maybe I'll give real estate a shot? So, like, how'd you get into the real nuts and bolts of game?
So I was a pro tennis player, and so I was playing tennis, I was teaching tennis.
You're not supposed to give that away, dude. When we're playing pickleball at my house, people aren't supposed to know that.
It's all right. And so I was grinding. I was working at various, you know, club facilities, working 8 hours a day, serving people that, you know, would ask me questions, you know. And I don't know why you're a therapist sometimes in that role, but you became a therapist, and they would start asking me real estate questions. And then one dude asked me, like, hey, do you want to be a project manager? And I'm like, bro, I have no experience in being a project
Interesting.
Manager. I'm a tennis pro.
What do you think he saw in you that had him think, does this dude want to be a project manager?
I was managing like 65 different children.
Wow.
So in different various courts and different programs and their, you know, agendas and all that. So it was a high level program I ran.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So how long, so then what was your first job in real estate?
So it was my stepdad's assistant.
Okay.
So basically, I went to him and I said, hey, this guy wants to hire me as a project manager. And he was like, no, you're coming to work for me.
Okay.
He's like, absolutely not. Because I think they knew each other. And my dad was like, nope, not going to happen.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And so he said, look, I'll teach you the ropes if you're really ready to learn. And I'd always ask my dad, not out of entitlement, because I was genuinely curious.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 18, 19 years old and you have this fire inside you and you're doing what I was doing, you're like, there's got to be more than this.
Right.
And so that was where kind of God placed opportunity in my life. Mm. And then I went to my dad and I said, look, here's what I've been offered. What do you think? Because I go back to him and I ask him for advice still to today. And so I literally started there, getting his mail, delivering his coffee.
How old are you at this point?
20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, 20, on the verge of being 21.
Yeah. And how long were you your pop's assistant for?
3 years.
Okay. And where'd you go from there after that?
So he made me work my way up the chain of command so I understood the corporate world.
Yeah.
And so I went from his assistant to assistant project manager to first assistant project manager, assistant vice president, senior vice president, or excuse me, vice president, senior vice president, and then the economy crashed.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now you take us there, right? You're 25, 26-ish?
26 years old, yeah.
26 years old, and so this is 2007, 8-ish, mm-hmm. in that zone.
Yep.
And so where do you go from there?
Well, luckily he gave me an education that I didn't know that I got, right? Like retrospectively looking back, that's why I always say more is caught than taught. I didn't know what he had given me until I was out of that space.
Right.
And applying it in other areas of my life.
Interesting.
So
Pops was there and you were doing some like wax on, wax off. Why am I doing these things?
Yeah.
And then the recession hits and you're put into a different environment and all of a sudden you're like, damn, Dad turned me into a Jedi.
Yeah, I still don't think that. I'm always learning, right? I appreciate that though. I went from there to writing a business plan about how to invest and divest in foreclosure real estate. I was lucky enough to office right down the street off of Birch with CT Realty.
Okay.
There were two legends, Tommy Thompson and Bob Campbell. My office, my cubicle, not office. Let's not get fancy. My cubicle.
I'm sure you made it look nice though.
I did. I had the orchid. I mean, it was nice. And you know, that was about all you could do for office attire, right? But I was lucky enough to listen to Bob and Tommy, who were, I mean, arguably, if you just Google those guys, they're legends.
Yeah.
You know, most of the big shopping centers that you see were done by these guys. And you would hear them analyze deals, and you would hear them talk about why they don't like that deal or why they don't like this. And I would just sit there and I would listen, right? Drink my coffee. I was supposed to be doing something for my dad. Sorry, Dad. But what they were saying was more interesting because their deals were a lot bigger than what we were working on.
Okay.
And so I just listened, you know, more than I spoke. And that's kind of where I got that from, is I just learned how to do that. And so in learning how to do that, they would always talk about foreclosures and what was coming. Now, this was like 06.
Okay.
And in 06, they were talking about something happening in, you know, Q4 of 08. And so they were forecasting out. And I was always like, these guys are nuts, because the economy was just going bananas at that point. And I remember a guy, Ray Polverini, who sat, you know, in an office, an actual office, right across from me, too. And he was their acquisitions guy.
Okay.
And so he was a really good friend of mine. And I went to him and I gave him a business plan. It was 2 pages. It was absolute crap. And I said, what do you think? And he told me exactly that. It's crap. Go back to work. And so I did. And I took it to a bunch of different people and they said the same thing. So I learned how to write a proper business plan. And then...
So what is it that... What was like your goal? What was the vision that you were trying to put together at that point?
At that point, it was trying to get a deal.
Okay.
You know, in 07, 08, when our investment partners stopped funding deals, the banks, basically Wells Fargo, called us and said, we're sorry, we just don't have the money to lend on your project. And you have your family capital at risk.
Right.
And you're about to lose everything, which happened. You get very, very creative. And it wasn't like, oh, this is going to be this master plan. It was, what do I need to do next?
Mm.
And so it was like, how do I fund a deal? Because I think I know what I'm doing, but apparently I don't. And then it was this go out and, you know, 08 happens, right? So flash forward, 08 happens, and the economy falls apart, and I'm a new dad.
Right.
And I'm newly sober, right? I got sober the day my son, Max, was born. And so my life completely changed on the decisions and how I looked at my legacy and what I wanted to leave behind, whether it be this child, and I didn't, you know what I was doing at the point.
Yeah.
I was just trying to do what was next in front of me.
How old were you when Max was born?
I was 28, 27, 28.
Mark, yeah. Like, I don't know. So I think that's an important thing to not skip over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what led up to that point? Was it like you know,
my son being born?
No. Where? How does that happen? It's happened to
Let's
me five.
Let's not talk about that at this.
It's happened to me five times. I don't know how that that occurs.
I don't know, man. No, birds and bees.
Getting. Where's my wife? Let me ask her.
It's magic.
Getting sober.
Yeah.
Right. So like, was it just an immediate thing? Was it? Was there some writing on the wall that you saw? What led you? Because you're 27, 28. There's still some partying to do.
Yeah.
You know, there's still.
So I highlighted as a club promoter.
Okay.
You know, I was still teaching tennis, doing development, and being a club promoter.
You're an active dude.
Yeah. And it was all to maintain a habit.
Yeah.
Right. And it got out of control to the point where, you know, I no longer liked looking at the mirror and seeing who was looking back at me.
Mm-hmm.
And when my son was born, I had to make a choice to basically, and I've never talked about this outside of the confines of two people, I had to make a choice of really turning my life around and like, how is my son going to look at me?
Yeah.
You know, because I never wanted him to look at the guy that I was looking at in the mirror that way. And I never wanted to look at my kids with unsober eyes, right? It for me, anyways.
Yeah.
Now, if you drink, that's totally fine, or whatever else. But like for me, it was just a choice that I had to make, or else I'd be dead.
That's pretty powerful, man. Give it up for that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, and here I am today, almost 15 years sober. And,
Let's go.
You know, three more kids later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it happened again. I don't know either.
Yeah.
Somehow. But
so, man, that's amazing. So let's shift into, I know a lot of people have questions about deals and development and flipping and investing, and we'll do a little bit of Q&A, right? But let's go straight to because like anybody that was surviving and being an agent or in any kind of business, I don't care if you worked at an ice cream shop, if you were working somewhere in the year 2008 to 2011, something dramatically shifted for you in there. So what I'm curious about is, how long were you in a funk of trying to figure it out, right? And when did something click for you and why?
Yeah, so I did not get business funding for my business plan. It was a year of refinement. And what happened and what made the business plan really work was I learned the lending side of the business. So
okay.
I think a lot of us in the game went to modifications, right? So I went from being a real estate developer to like struggling and working for a modification company and then working my way up to that to be like the team lead and running the you know, teams. But I really figured out how banks look at money, right? So I knew how to spend money.
I've known you for a long time. I did not know you worked at a modification company.
I did.
For those of you who don't know, if you just got into real estate the last seven, 8 years, you have no idea what we're talking about. But in 2004, 5, and 6, there was a lot of money made in real estate. In 2007, it began to shift. And what happened is the mortgage world, real estate world began to fall apart. There were all of these loans people got that were ridiculous, that didn't make any sense. People were getting foreclosed on. People were losing their homes. And these loan modification companies started to pop up where they would meet with the specialist and they would essentially hire that specialist to get them a new loan so they did not lose their house.
You know the script. That was the script. Literally, that was the script. But yeah, so I did that and learned how banks really, because we were a legit shop.
Yeah, because there were a lot? of shops that
there
were
was
not.
A, oh, bro, yeah. No, that was, yeah. I was lucky enough
Here's
to be
three
a
grand.
One that was real.
3 grand and it could, we could save your house.
Yeah. So did okay at that, but it was just learning how banks looked at loans from the back end, how it was processed. And then when I saw kind of legislation coming down where the, everybody was going to be closed,
yeah.
I went off and started my own,
okay.
created files, finished every single one. And then that kind of took the development side, the understanding how money is lent, how money is borrowed, how money is applied. And then it perfected my business plan. And my sponsor at the time basically had introduced me to a guy who was married to a very wealthy heiress. And they said, look, we have a real estate portfolio. Take a look at it. And because of the way that I'm wired, I am very analytical at looking at specific asset classes. And so I broke it down for them. And I ended up, without moving money around, taking their 6% and making them 10% like that.
Nice.
Just by kind of a reallocation of how they classified their assets. And then they said, okay, great, here's 10 million bucks, go spend it.
Mm.
And so I turned that 10 into 75 over a period of about 5 years, 6 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And then it was, I met my wife at actually that party. And she's like, why don't you become an agent? And you know, the credit goes to her because I was like, oh, you know, I've always hired agents. I thought I knew what agency was. I knew absolutely nothing. So I failed my real estate test a couple times because my ego got in the way. And it was like, oh,
easy
business is gonna be good. And I went back, failed again.
How many times did you fail the test?
Three.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Four I landed. And
I was hoping you're a little closer to mine.
But. How many times for you?
I failed it 6 times.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. And look at you now, right?
Yeah.
It's all right. You got to really fail over and over in order to be successful.
I'm a professional failure for sure. Yeah.
So I did that, and then I didn't make any money. And my parents were my first clients, worst clients ever.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Mom and Dad. They were just so hard. They even beat me up on commission.
Dang.
I'm like, dude, I'm making you so much money. Like, I know how much money you're making. You got to beat me up on my first
That's
deal.
That's messed up.
And then my dad got into a car accident shortly after I got my license and kind of shocked our world. Like, he almost died. And I remember that was a real turning point in my career, looking back, of like, okay, if he's going to be kind of incapacitated for a long time, I've got to step up as the man of not just my family, but of the family.
Right. What and year is so, this when you're now an agent?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah. And so my dad was in the hospital. He was bedridden and, you know, couldn't really move his legs or anything like that. And an opportunity came to me and I'm like, look, I've got this opportunity to put money with a deal.
Yeah.
I said, what do you think? And luckily, you know, the thing with my dad is he's so smart and he's such a wealth of knowledge, not to mention he's like my best friend.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where thank you God, that his mind was saved so that we could have those conversations, because I believe that was part of his therapy and healing for physically. But we underwrote a deal literally on a napkin.
Wow.
And we went out and we bought 14 acres, funded the deal, got everything done, and it turned everything around.
That's awesome.
And that led to, you know, having deal flow there, but also, you know, making money as a developer.
Yeah.
That turned into another relationship. And then before you knew it, you know, we're doing 200 units in San Diego.
Wow.
You know, and then we just kind of evolved. And then come 2016, I get an email randomly from like Bravo executives.
Yeah.
Saying that I've been cast or I've been chosen for a TV show. And I was like, I don't even know who these people are.
Right.
Right. And the production company's name was World of Wonder. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I thought it was a joke.
Yep.
And I responded back, told my wife, and it ended up being legit. And I got a TV show and I had really very minimal transactions underneath me. And so again, another turning point in my real estate career was like, step on the gas,
right?
Utilize your resources the people that you know, and put your education to good work. And then I haven't looked back.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Give it up for that. You know, I think clearly,
You know, when I kind of look at it, like, how did this all happen? It was just a matter of you being a man of vision, mm-hmm. matched with skill. And I think when you have a vision, you might not know exactly what it is that you want for your life. You just know you want something else. You mm-hmm. know there's something that you're meant to do. 100%. And you've got some game. And you show up and you're like, all right, God, I'm just going to apply myself.
Yeah.
And God starts to make these things work for you because you got pushed into a position basically where you're now, in a positive way, forced to perform
100%.
As real estate agent.
100%.
With very few transactions as a real estate agent, the harder part,
mm-hmm.
you know, you were developing the homes for real estate agents.
Yes.
So what was the most difficult part? Because how many people in this room are real estate agents and have never developed? You're a real estate agent only, show of hands. Right, so we got a lot of real estate agents mm-hmm. in the room. What was the hardest part for you about becoming an agent?
Understanding the marketing aspect of how to leverage a success and then the prospecting aspect, like all of the marketing aspect that goes into what we do now,
right,
was such a new thing and hard thing for me to get my head around.
Mm.
And it was like I had to catch up where people had careers, long careers of this and understanding how the game works, right? Like front, back, side to side, as far as letting people know you have a new listing. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought the MLS would do all the work.
Right.
Literally.
Right.
And then funny story, just going back to like when I first got in so that people can relate. I actually had my car repoed in
nice.
Front of my parents' house while showing a property. Right. And all of my tennis gear
sucks.
In it in the middle of their courtyard.
Oh, my God.
So as Sean Casey was the guy that saw that.
Oh, my yeah. goodness. That's
that was
incredible.
Not awesome. My wife was not happy when I called her and told her that.
What'd you learn from that?
Talk to your wife more.
Make the car payment.
Yeah, make the car payment. Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting, right? Like, I feel like it's so easy to, it's like we don't take the steps that we know we need to take
yeah.
to achieve certain goals because of a fear of failure.
Right.
But I always say that the lesson in the L is always multiple times greater than the reward of the win. And
100%.
If we could just be people who know that, hey, even if I bomb, even if I completely fail at this thing, that in itself is going to be the greatest lesson.
Of course.
Right?
I mean, but experience only teaches you that.
Yeah.
You're not going to go into life thinking that. You have to, like, go through it, look back on it, and say, okay, here's where, you know, that lesson is obtained.
Yeah, man.
You got to be open to it, too.
So when did you start to kind of see it all come together? Like, all right, real estate, development, right? So you got the TV show thing started what year?
16.
That's in 16.
Mm-hmm.
So you had kind of been playing around as agent mm-hmm. and builder mm-hmm. for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Things are starting to pick up.
Yep.
The show starts 2016.
Yep.
Did it impact your business immediately? When
No.
did you start to kind of catch your stride, would you say?
So it didn't impact my business immediately because I'm still constantly learning that aspect of
Yeah.
leveraging those relationships and assets that you have. What really happened was that it added credibility to what I had already done
Mm.
and so that I could always go back on it because you're vetted like extensively when you do these things. Like
Yeah.
if you say that you did something, they double check your work. Like,
right.
is this real? So that you're not, you know, pretend. So it added credibility to kind of what I had already done. And then I just knew that I wasn't going to go on TV and try to be a clown and try to be something that I wasn't. I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to give the message of, look, I'm a believer. That's where my foundation comes from, is my faith first, you know, God, my wife, my children, and just keep to those principles and never kind of waver from those.
Yeah.
And if you do those things in life, like, God provides. So to ask, like, when did it click? It just is still clicking.
Mm.
You know, it's still this ever-evolving process of, like, okay, let's just build upon that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not this plan in this specific format. It's like, stick to your principles, do good work, be a good human being, you know, and be in an attitude of servitude, and it works out. And that's literally what happened.
That's awesome. Give it up for that. Give it up for that. So I want to open it up for some questions. I want to give the group here an opportunity to ask some questions that they have, whether it's life-related, real estate-related, investor-related, developer-related. Like, this dude right here has multiple different skill sets in the game, from mortgage to investing to Jedi agent now. Like, I always say, I will not show a house in front of this dude. I won't do it. Yeah. We've been co-list partners on multiple properties. I will not show a property if he's in the room. I swear to God, and no. He knows this, because when I show a property, it's like, all right, so welcome to the house. This house is 3,000 square feet. It's built in 2020. The master's over here. There's a bathroom here, pool. And then I'm going to return a couple calls if y'all need anything. The detail that this dude goes into, you know, and so many times, even if he wasn't a part of it being built, he really dedicates himself to the craft of knowing the details. And I really respect that a lot. So whenever we're co-list partners, I'm just like, dude, I'll be on social and I'll do that thing that I do.
We're gonna do a lot of things. We have done a lot of things, but we're gonna do a lot of things together. And he's out of his mind to say that. Let's give it up for Kevin Sturdivant first and foremost.
Thanks.
Yeah, we would not be here on this podcast if he was just that guy. That he's not an ordinary agent. He is. He puts the extra into ordinary, for sure.
Thanks, man. I think in real estate, it's like, you have to find what you're good at, right? You have to find your skill set. And there's so many different skill sets, of organization to the details, to just knowing how to get into rapport with people, to connecting, to social media, to I think there's a lot of different ways to succeed. It's not just one way. I'm constantly trying to get my team to door knock more and make cold calls more. That's not the only way to do it, you know? There's a lot of different ways to succeed in this business. But truly, man, you have been a big inspiration to me in a lot of different ways. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, I love you, man. You know that.
Give it up for this dude one more time. So let's open it up. This is more of a mastermind than it is of a podcast. Yeah. Yes, we've got a couple mics here. But it's also about community, right? When I look at the word community, it really comes down to common unity. Mm-hmm. And the common unity we all have is to learn and excel and elevate as people, as business people. Yes, we have a general foundation of real estate, but there's a lot of different ways to improve and get to the next level. So let's open it up for some questions.
Don't be shy.
You
can ask anything. Yeah.
Elijah Sturdivant.
Say, better not be about pickleball, bro.
curious as to how have you leveraged your kind of wide range of skill sets of development, investor, and agent into each other? Like, how have you gotten more business, and have you gotten more business from being and knowing a lot about development and getting business as an agent?
That's one word, value. So when you have an attitude of servitude, you go above and beyond for your clientele, and you try to not teach your clientele, or you educate them when it's your specific scope of work in your contract, like you're selling a property, right? Educate them on the market, educate them on the comps, blah, blah, blah. But also help them understand the value proposition of what you're giving them as an agent. And so what happened again is, it's kind of happenstance, is that most of my clients tend to be investors or people that have, you know, are long in the tooth, so to speak, in real estate. But you just leverage the opportunity, and you provide knowledge to that. And you always add value. If you're not adding value to the situation you're in, then you're not going to be able to leverage that specific situation into something more.
Give it up for that. So I'm sure a lot of people are curious too, like, what percentage of your time, of your business, are you real estate agent, right? Where you're not a partner or designer or builder, you're shift, and I have a second part of this question. What percentage are you being real estate agent, and then what percentage of the time are you a partner on the deal, a builder, and did you work with them through the design?
That's a great question.
And then the second thing is, what part do you like more?
I like it all.
Okay.
And you know, the answer is 100% of both all the time.
Interesting.
And so I'm literally, it's a minute by minute of what hat I'm going to wear.
Yeah.
Because the fortunate thing about real estate is, no matter what area you're in, commercial, residential, industrial, it all is interwoven.
Mm.
So you have to wear those hats all the time. And
yeah.
So if you're an agent and a developer, you have to be able to wear both hats simultaneously and think, you know, vertical lines, and run those paths.
You know how I know that's true about you? I just realized something. So like before things got really easy, if you got in real estate the last couple years, things were really easy as real estate agent. If you got a listing, it sold, and you could do like two photos on the MLS and it sold and got multiple offers. People were writing offers over this last couple years with no contingencies.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're ever gonna see that again, not anytime soon. No contingencies. But I was just thinking that before this, so like 2017, 18, 19, mm-hmm. when we first started working together, I definitely brought you on some deals when I was on like the verge of quitting.
Mm-hmm.
There were like two or three deals where I'm like, I'm done with this.
Yep.
I can't do this anymore. And I don't want to lose the listing. Let me bring Drew on and help him, have him help me save the deal and carry it through. Mm-hmm. What I noticed about you is that you did not lose your determination and drive.
Nope.
Like until the very end.
Nope.
For me, I'm like, if the thing's not sold in like 30 days, I'm kind of over it. You kept the inspiration going. What is that trait that you have?
Well, first, I didn't want to disappoint you. Right.
Oh, thanks, man.
So that's another thing. It's true. You bring me on, you give me an opportunity, I'm going to do everything I can to maximize that opportunity and bring value to the table. So
there
it's
was
going
a couple
back to that.
Deals where I just was starting to feel bad.
I remember.
Oh my God, I don't know if this is going to happen.
I remember.
Should we bring on a third person?
Yeah, I remember.
There was a couple where we brought on somebody,
you know who,
and I'm like, let's bring on that guy now.
That guy that shall not be named. But no, that drive. That drive comes from a place, honestly, of like not wanting to ever be in a position where I was before. Like, you heard me say my car got repoed, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's an embarrassing thing to say to people. Like, I know a lot of you, and there's a lot of love in this room. I don't know most of you in this room. But it's important to say, like, when you have that in your life happen and you disappoint yourself like
that. God, that sucks.
And it wasn't because I didn't pay the bill. It was because I just didn't have it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it wasn't like you're being irresponsible.
No,
like the money was not there. I've had that experience twice, man. And one time it was my dream car. And just it feels really
seven?
Dude, you know how stupid it feels to have your dream car repossessed?
I do.
And the rims alone
were
$8,000. I was in a real estate office. And my buddy, and I knew it was going to happen.
Was this with Rich?
Yeah, and I knew this was like 2007, 2008, I don't know, and I knew it was gonna happen, and like because a tow truck would like be following.
Oh, yeah.
So
I put
a business card over the VIN number, and I don't know how they cut up to it, but one day I'm in my office, I was at a Century 21 office back in the day, and my dude's like, "What's up with what are they doing to your car? What are you having worked on?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, they're getting it fixed." It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's not good.
You know, but that's how you learn. That's how you grow. And I think what I've had the opportunity to coach hundreds of people, and I've seen people make it, and I've seen people not make it, and I've seen people do the work and not make it, and I've noticed that just doing the work doesn't get you there. You have to have this drive, and when I see the people who don't produce the results, but they're doing the work, they're just missing that fire. They're missing that desire.
It was, that drive comes from, again, the faith that I have, right? And you're in those situations, and when you, it's just not in me, man. That's like the best question is like, I don't have it in me to quit.
Right.
I don't have it in me to lose inspiration. I don't have it in me to be down and out. Like, if you ever talk to me out on the street, like, I'm a pretty cheerful guy.
Yeah.
You know, ask my wife. Sometimes I'm grumpy, but for sure.
Pretty cheerful, dude.
You know, she always says I have, like, resting angry face, but I don't. I'm not an angry guy. But no, it's just not in me to have that. But it also comes from a place of never wanting to be that person. You know, growing up as a developer's kid, sure, it sounds great, but there's more to that story of, like, we've had everything and lost everything several times. And so, you know, when you're a junior in high school and you're moving out of your house to live in an apartment and you realize that your parents have to rebuild and you're that old,
yeah,
you know, you see those things and you're like, I never want that in me.
Right.
Ever. Yeah. I never want to have my kids go through that. Because it was a shock, and that was a very pivotal age in my development, 17, 16, 17, where it kind of sticks with you your whole life. Like, I don't ever want to put my wife, my kids, anybody through that.
Mm.
And so when you have that, like, every situation that comes up, you act as if that's your last deal, right? And so with you, when we were doing these opportunities, it was like, okay, I need to give my absolute all to this and leave it all out on the field so that I can go home and rest easy at night.
Give it up for that. That's awesome. Do you ever get jealous of the life your kids have and, like, the fact that they're not really struggling? And then do you ever think, like, maybe I should make up a reason for them to struggle?
That's a conversation often had in our house. But we,
like, what
you
can
know,
I
we,
do to give these guys some trauma?
We again, it goes back to our, you know, bringing up. I have two sides. So I had my stepdad who gave me an education on how to be a businessman, and I had my dad, God rest his soul, who gave me an education on hard work.
Yeah.
Right? On, like, how to do specific things. And so I was able to have that, those two different upbringings, and really understand, you know, how to become, I guess, a good dad.
Yeah.
You know, of like, hey, if you want it, earn it. Nothing is given to you.
That's awesome, man. Give it up for that.
Yeah.
So we could open it up for a couple more questions. What else do you have? Yep, my dude here, Blue.
How's it going?
What's up, man? There's a lot, right? I mean,
there's
you could
a
do
lot.
Hotels, you could do land,
yeah.
You could do subdivisions,
so, and
you
I've
could
done
do
all
luxury.
Of those. Yeah. It was kind of growing up in the business. Something happens when you're a young man in your 20s, and then you get to your 30s and you're a dad, and then you get to your 40s like I am now. And you kind of figure that out as you go along. Right, is like, okay, this is really cool, but I'm really not super duper inspired by it. Like, it's a job, right? And so what I did is I found myself gravitating towards things that were creative, that gave me inspiration, and were things that I could put my own stamp on.
Mm.
And I found that, like, in hotels, it's institutional. In industrial, it's very boring. In commercial, depending on what type of commercial it is, it's incredibly complex. And so I found a rhythm of, like, okay, I'm really good at this space. And again, it just kind of all clicked of, like, all the things that had been in my life, inspiration-wise, design-wise, you know, business-wise, all the conversations that I had heard, it, like, all of a sudden happened. It literally, like the video that I'm sure all of you guys are sick of seeing that we post every day before this podcast, is, like, it just clicked.
You know when it clicked? When I saw that this dude is in his this dude is in his vortex, this guy's in it. When you were walking me through Windward with the baby Bajorn on and I brought the buyer, I was like, this dude is in his flow,
yeah,
right here.
Yeah.
It was pretty sick to see.
Yeah, so that's really when
little
it
little dude
it
just
happened.
Like arms moving. And he's just it, like, you know,
that's my little guy. That's
awesome.
Moose. That's Moose. No, it happened probably later 30s, before I turned 40, like 38 is when it happened for me, and I'm not that old, but, you know, 38 is when it clicked, because I had that much inspiration, and I, like, kind of, like, grown up and figured out really what I wanted to do and the space I wanted to be in and, like, what made me really happy. And that's literally what happened.
Give it up for that. I think that should be really encouraging to a lot of people, especially who's under 35 in this room.
Y'all are lucky.
Right?
Damn.
Okay. Who's under 30? Who's under 30?
right?
Oh my God.
So I think we're in a generation too, though, where it's like, you feel like you have to figure it all out right now, today, and like you have to be this superstar this afternoon, you have to be this expert this
afternoon. That was a struggle.
And I think what you should really take from this, what Drew's saying, is just do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Just do the work. You're gonna figure out your rhythm. You're gonna find, and it is going to align. You know what I mean? Like I always thought I was gonna be like a Tony Robbins type of dude.
You are.
Kinda, right?
Yeah, dude, you totally are.
But
yeah, you inspire me, bro.
But take the skill set, and I'm like, all right, well, maybe I'll be like a motivational real estate dude.
You are.
You know what I mean? And when I look at the
look at these people.
I know, but what I'm saying is it took a long time to develop this. It took a long time to get comfortable in my own skin because for my first 10 years of real, I was like, okay, no, you can't talk about the seven equities and affirmations and goal setting. Let me put this over here in this separate thing.
Yep.
Over here, I need to do FSBOs and expires and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like
grind.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we all learn as you continue to chase your passions from development to personal development to health and wellness and whatever it is. And you reach a point where you're like, all right, I'm in my zone and I can just do it the way I want to do it. But I don't think that comes until you have really committed to the craft and gotten good. You have to get good at a certain thing before you're able to put your spin on it.
Yeah. And you got to be willing to be better than your last.
That's good.
Right? Yep. Like you always have to strive to be like, okay, I did that really, really well. This is the lesson I learned from it. This becomes a new standard. And you're constantly not like lowering your bar, but raising your bar for yourself of like for instance, a project, you know, there's specific things that can happen, deliveries, this, that, or spec level. And you're like, okay, I know that this is the problems that I'm having now. I'm now no longer going to do that because I'm seeing now how to solve that before it happens.
Yeah.
And then you start to refine your process, right? So you're essentially setting new standards for every single project.
Mm.
If you can apply that to your life, and it's not a daily basis thing. Some days are bad, man.
Yeah.
You know, and some days are really, really good.
Some days you and I are just talking crap to each other back and forth about the situations.
You're not supposed to tell these people that, bro.
You're
an inspirational real estate guy. Come on.
Right now.
Yeah.
That's important to have people where, you know, you just have, I think it's really important to have friends and have family that you can get things off your chest and just let people know what's bugging you.
Bro,
and they're
so
not going to judge you for it.
Definitely not.
We crack a lot of jokes behind the scenes.
We do.
What else, y'all? Like, yep.
I have the fortunate, you know, honor to be, you know, copy what you're saying.
Absolutely, bro.
And I don't see very often a collaboration like the AG team, like you and Oga, where you have two kind of, you know, you guys can kind of stand your ground by yourself, but you guys work well together. How did that kind of come about?
So I didn't want to be fired off the TV show. I was incredibly insecure about, you know, I'm not genetically blessed with height, right? I do all right, I think, looks wise. But at the same time, I was like, man, I'm gonna be on TV. Like, not just TV, but like all over the place. And so I saw Hoda and I knew that she was closing. And people in the office were like, this is before you joined, we're talking about her. And like, this girl's closing and she was new. And I met her and we just ended up laughing. And I was like, you know what? You know this person, I know this person, let's collaborate. And so that turned into one listing, which, you know, she fought me the whole time. She did not want any association with, like, to be the H of HD. So I came up with the name, I created the name, and I kept putting it out there as, like, a hashtag, right? And then finally we did, like, three or four deals deep, and it really started to click for us. And then it became a thing. And then that thing became business, and that business became a brand. And then our brand just built upon that. And that's literally what happened, you know? But she fought me the whole way. She'll tell you the same story. She didn't believe in it to begin with. I had to prove to her again, and that was me saying like, okay, you may not know me like that, but let me show you what I can do. So, and I still do that to this day.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've known you a long time.
Long time.
Reality show, was it always a positive influence?
No. That is a great question. Let's give it up for my PR girl, Alexandra Taylor, by the way. So the negative that came along with it was kind of one of those things where you knew it was going to come, right? And so you have to have thick skin in this business to be able to say, like, this is why I'm different. And you have to be able to differentiate yourself in the form of showing what you can do, right? Because there's one thing of telling somebody, there's another thing of showing somebody. So I was able to really show people how I was different by just being who I was and being authentic and not getting wrapped up in the negativity or the gossip of what was happening. And I leveraged that by just wanting to always be authentic. And I didn't care if I got famous, I didn't care if I got paid. It was about leveraging what my career could look like if I did it correctly. And I stayed true to that. What's up, Mark?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Give it up for that. I know we got some investors, developers in the room too. My dude Cole, my dude Mark, Christopher,
yeah.
Javier, Lucas, Sebastian. I know you guys have some questions. There's some good real estate related questions, developer questions. Go for it, Cole.
Great question.
And I think even to kind of add a little bit to that same question is there anything that you're seeing now with your expertise mm-hmm. that it looks similar to 2007?
There are similarities as far as like the froth that's on the top, right? But there are a lot of things that are very, very different. Like you can't even compare. You know, I've been through several, growing up in the business, 5 different recessions. So I've lived through them all. And what I can tell you about 08 is we will never see that kind of market happen again, in my professional opinion. The biggest difference is the job market. What is the job market now versus what it was then? If you look at the job market now, if I said, raise your hand, who knows what solar companies are, you'd raise your hand. If I said, who knows what Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, those companies are, you'd raise your hand. If you wanted to talk about fiber optics, you'd raise your hand. The tech sector has become the blue-collar sector of the economy. And so that is a big difference, and people pay a lot of money in that. Also, the biggest difference is that equity now is proven through that market, and so a lot of people are sitting on a ton of equity in their houses versus the other market. Mm. There are basics that always apply in the real estate business, which is compression, suppression, and expansion, right? And so compression happens, it's a good thing, and compression happens when you have external things that suppress a certain asset value. So land values will go down, house values will speculatively go down, but will ultimately go back up. But we had such a run-up that what you're seeing now is that the froth is being scraped off, and we're still at 2019, Q4, Q1 of 2020 before COVID. So when you look at that, that's the new basis, right? It's a bell curve. And so when you look at that, it's just completely different. I think that somewhere along the line, in the next probably 15 to 20 years, we will probably have a great recession, but nothing like we saw before. And recessions are not a bad thing. And again, it's you hear it on Instagram, you hear it on other, you know, you see it in the news. It's a reset, right? That's absolutely true. That's one of those principles that always applies, is that you've only got one place to look, and that's up.
Let's go. Yeah, I think the majority of what's on the news in regards to rates and recession is designed to have you experience fear mm-hmm. and worry for different agendas.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing for everyone to know is that in the event that things shift, that doesn't mean things stop. Yes, things shift. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's not, but that doesn't mean it stops. Homes are going to be sold. Homes are going to be built. It might cost more to buy them, and it might cost less when they sell. That does not mean the job is gone. So who's going to make it? The ones who are skilled and the ones who are dedicated to the craft.
Yeah, and just to get back to your question, because it was a really, really good and smart question, is that your margins don't change. Your cost of entry changes, your cost of goods changes, but your margin doesn't change. And where the really good guys kind of can make massive profits is understanding how to change that first variable of how can I utilize what's going on now to suppress value and, you know, basically get the best deal possible. Before it was, you know, you could buy a piece of dirt, build a house, put an ADU, and make a ton of money. Whereas now it's very geographic specific. 2020 to 22, it wasn't. So, you know, you just have to know that your margins won't change. It's just the game has changed a little bit as far as optics are concerned.
And I think you're a great example that awesome product is going to move and is going to move well at all times.
Yep.
Because supposedly right now we're in the middle of this funk where nothing is happening, and just go in and study the MLS, and mm-hmm. that's where you want to do the most of your data, especially in your own immediate neighborhood.
Yeah.
We love to play the game of setting records yep. and breaking records, and they're not as many records being set right now. But I will say, and I won't say any of the details, that I have been very, very proud of a certain record that I have in an area of 5,000 homes that yep. as of very recently, you have beaten that record.
Oh.
And why is that? It's because of the skill set, the design, and doing what you do, man. And I think you guys just have to know, like, from yourself being the product as individual to the product that you're actually selling, if you're good and you've got game, it's always going to move. So congrats.
Thanks.
I look forward to seeing it close.
It'll be good. We got to get there, but it'll be massive.
Awesome, man.
For sure.
Got time for a couple more.
Yeah.
Yep, my man here.
So I don't have an assistant.
Anybody need a job?
To sometimes the chagrin of my wife, you know, I've always talked about balance isn't found in like long spurts. It's a day-to-day thing. And so I have to look at what's on my plate. Okay, when I wake up, it's always God first, no matter what. You know, into my Bible, into scripture, putting a post together about trying to inspire everybody because that helps me. But in general, like, it's what do I have to do today? Like, I'm not worried about next week or whatever. And that comes from the project management training of, like, I have a task in front of me, let's handle that. And doing those things right helps the long-term effect. Like, it's a trickle effect of if you do sequentially 3-4 things right in a day, it'll balance out. And things, he taught me this, actually, because I'd call him and I'd be, you know, angry about a seller or something. He's like, you know what? Or he'd call me and he'd be angry about something. And we'd just wrap out and he'd be like, you know what I realized? And it was that everything works out on its own. And so for me, it's just balance. You know, I don't have like a magic formula of like, oh, you've got a time block and you've got to do this and you got to do that. Like, that doesn't work for me. If I time block, I have ADD, it's like 5 minutes in, I'm like, no, I'll go do something else, literally. And so I just try to make sure that I'm touching on flow, right? And flow for me is family, lifestyle, occupation, wishes, and dreams. As long as I'm hitting that flow on a day-to-day basis, then I'm good.
That's awesome.
And my wife is happy.
That's yeah. important. Mm. That's important. What else? My man here.
Situations, you know, what would best, it's wisdom, you know, with age comes a little bit of wisdom, hopefully, right? And, you know, I'm 44 years old and I've got some wisdom behind me. I've made a lot more mistakes, you know, and I've got more wins ahead of me than I do mistakes ahead of me. And it's that situation of understanding when has your ego ever gotten you in a very, very good place? Never. When has being humble, being grateful, being of servitude, and being of service to others gotten you to a good place? Every time. So it's really not that hard of a choice. It's the choices is, am I gonna stop my life right then and there, pause, instead of react? That's really what happens.
That's about it, y'all. Give it up.
Yeah.
Oh, I think my mother-in-law has a question. Dorothy, do you have a question?
Hi.
Hey, in this
So
that's a great question.
The answer to that is 100%. I've had guys that are billionaires, and this isn't gloating or anything, pour into me and say, always build through a down market. Because the guys that are building through a down market are the guys that are going to win. Because why? They're the guys that deliver product when it starts to go up. So be bullish. It's always a good time to buy real estate. It's never a good time to pause.
Let's go. Let's go. Mark?
Yes.
Because obviously your taxable income is slack 40%, right? So is there any strategy you use to kind of bankroll that money, the profit margin that you accumulated?
Come on, bro. In public, you're asking questions like that? That's a private conversation. Can't give you the secret sauce, my man. Hello, by the way. It's good to see you, bro. The answer to that is utilize LLCs appropriately. Know your states, the tax advantages to each state, but 1031, shelter your tax. Pay yourself enough to where you know you can live, but always invest, right? Because you can never be hurt by investing your capital. I don't personally take project dividends to myself, to me personally. It always goes to a corporation. That corporation's typically the managing partner or the vesting entity. That entity then goes in 1031s into it. We create a new one that becomes a managing partner, so on and so forth. And pretty soon, because those properties are up-leg properties, they're never I never make lateral moves. It's always step up, right? Is the tax is wiped out. By the time you get to a specific asset, 4 or 5 deep typically is what the math is on completely wiping away your tax liability. So that's what I do.
You're really smart, man.
Yeah.
I'm just really grateful, to be able to hit you up and ask you questions. It's always inspirational. And again, we do these last Thursday of every month. I don't know how we're going to top this one, but can you all please give it up? Make a huge round of applause for my dude, Drew. Wifey has a question.
My wife.
Wifey's got a question. What's going on?
So I understand that you guys have worked together. Have you ever considered working with
Yes, as a matter of fact. There's a rumor going around about something happening.
I'm going to look like Sean Connery by the time that goes down. I can't wait for the
it'll
day.
It'll be sooner than later, but it's a private thing, babe. Thank you. But yeah, so that's probably gonna happen. Case is a home for me. So all of the Case family, thank you for always welcoming me.
Of course.
Alana, thank you for welcoming me. You put me on the spot, stuttering, babe. I don't usually stutter, but my wife makes me stutter. But the news that there will be a time where that happens, and it'll be amazing, and Kevin and I will be doing lots and lots of big things together.
Let's go, give it up, y'all. And, look, Case, again, this is a community, this is our home. I'm super grateful to just be surrounded by awesome people. So we're going to continue bringing this to y'all week after week, month after month. Put the vibes out there that my Instagram gets unhacked. Why that occurred, I'm
that
not
sucked.
Sure, but, we will figure it out and we will be back. There are some forces working on it. But truly, man, thank you for taking the time.
I like
to do these at 3:00 because I want everybody to consider that this is work, right? This is work related. It is life related. But I want to encourage you to take the things that you have learned on this Thursday at 3:00 appointment and take it to work. Grind, improve. Continue elevating, stay inspired to move. Thank you guys. One more time.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank
Let's
you,
go.
Bro. Thank
All
you.
Right, y'all. Peace.
Let's go.